Amen. Well, it's good to see you today. If you missed Wednesday night, we had our together celebration this last Wednesday, and it was one of the greatest nights I can think of in as long as I've been a pastor here. It was awesome. So if you missed it, you really want to plan the last Wednesday of each month. We get together in here round tables and eat together and fellowship and worship and have communion. It was just an awesome night. So glad for those of you who were here. For those of you who aren't, plan on doing it the last Wednesday of this month. Now, if you'll turn in your Bibles to the book of Mark, as we're moving through the whole Bible and in a year, we've come to the Gospel of Mark. Mark was a gospel that, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John all tell the story of Jesus. Matthew, as we saw last week, explains the story of Jesus presented to Jews, presenting Jesus as the Messiah. The book of Mark presents Jesus as a servant. Luke presents him as a man, and John presents him as God. Mark, I've always loved the book of Mark because it's a quick treatment. It's the shortest of the Gospels, but it has the most stories because Mark kind of has ADD, and he just boom, 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 tells you what happened and then what happened and then what happened, and it's a refreshing way to go through the Gospel. You can just see in the first chapter, you know, there's the whole thing about John the Baptist, and then John baptized Jesus, the temptation of Jesus, the four fishermen were called his disciples, there's casting out demons, healing people, Peter's mother-in-law is healed, and a bunch of people were healed, you know, after the sunset Sabbath, and you have, you know, just boom, boom, all these things. The one thing that really jumped out at me as I was studying through the book of Mark, though, is it's stunning to see the kind of people that Jesus associated with, because throughout the book is a series of encounters, and in each of these encounters, we see Jesus dealing with people that most of us really wouldn't deal with. He associates with the kind of people that no one else really cares about, and one of the things that really jumped out at me as I was going through the book is this whole concept of touch. Touching is something that we're all very sensitive about. Our skin is the largest organ in our body. And touching can be either a really positive thing or a really negative thing. Years ago when I was a pastor at Calvary Costa Mesa, Anne was sitting out in the congregation with her sister, and as she was sitting there, you know, they'd do the Calvary crunch and scoot everyone over, and she was next to this old guy, and all of a sudden the guy's like got his hand on her leg, and she's boom, you know, knocks it off, and then she's like, oh man, I got a weirdo over here, and then again his hand is on her again, and she's finally, by the end of the service, she's going, God, I just wanted to worship you, I wanted to come here and just enjoy you and hear from your word, and I got this pervert next to me, and she was like moving over, she was practically on Sharon's lap, and then after the service, the guy next to her, his friend was kind of helping him up because his whole left side was paralyzed and he had no feeling, and his arm was just falling there. So, but you know that feeling of like, you're touching me and I really don't want to touch you. One of the things we teach kids right off the bat is don't touch. And there's a problem to that, though, because touching is something that's incredibly valuable to humans. Some of you maybe have heard the studies, they date back to the 40s even when they started discovering this, and they evaluated kids in orphanages where there were a whole bunch of kids and not that many workers, and so some of these children just didn't experience human touch very much. And they found the negative effects of not being touched compared to then if you bring people in just to touch them, it actually makes a chemical difference. But lately, they've done a lot more studies. They did one study a few years ago with the NBA players, professional basketball players. And interestingly, they stood courtside and they watched how often the players touch each other. and they kept track of it. And actually, that year, it was a couple years ago, the two top teams in the NBA were the Lakers and the Celtics, and they were the two teams that touched each other the most. And it was from that research that now if you watch an NBA game, and they're in the playoffs right now, so I hope you are, somebody will go to the line and everybody touches them. And then they shoot a free throw, and it doesn't matter if you brick the free throw, hit the bottom of the rim, every member of your team goes and taps you. But that's why, because they discovered that actually touch makes someone more effective. There was another interesting study I read where a teacher in a classroom would, as they're walking through the classroom, they would reach out and touch certain students, just touch them on the back or on the arm. And then there are certain students that they didn't touch at all. And amazingly, the students that were touched were twice as likely to answer a question, to volunteer for a task, or things like that. It was amazing what it would do. You know, in a marriage, what touching means in relationships and things like that. But they figured out that actually there are hormonal changes that happen in a body as a result of human touch. And there's one hormone oxytocin, that actually what this hormone does is it makes you feel safe. And when someone's being touched, it gives you trust. And when someone's touching you, it actually increases that hormone. And then there's also a hormone called cortisol that is a hormone that makes you feel emotionally stressed and things like that. And human touch causes the level of cortisol to actually drop in your body. And what happens between the two of those in your prefrontal cortex of your brain, the amount of activity that's spent in emotional stress actually transfers and is then available for problem solving, because you feel like you're a part of something else when that happens. And interestingly, these hormone levels in children 3 and 4 years after they had left an orphanage and were now being touched, there were still discernible differences as a result of the early touching that went on. And so touching is really important. All that to say, when we look at Mark, as we go through watching Jesus interacting with people, Mark goes to a great degree of attention to call attention to the fact that Jesus was touching people. Now, you know how it would feel like to be touched by... One of my questions for the Home Fellowships this week is, have you ever touched a famous person? And why was that a big deal? And it does. There are people, I'll never wash my hand again. And Ann and I were going through the questions. And the one I remembered was Billy Graham. When he touched me, and as I talked to him, he had his hand up on my neck and we walked together. And it was like, wow, it was Billy Graham. It was amazing. For Ann, it was Peter Frampton. We're walking through a crowd going to a movie, and all of a sudden, bam, Ann just runs into this guy and almost knocks this little guy over, and it was Peter Frampton. But, you know, touch. Imagine here God comes to earth and he touches you, and you could see, hey, that would be a big deal. But let's look through some of these encounters, and there's a pattern that we see. In Mark chapter 1, look down at beginning with verse 40. It says, now a leper came to him, Jesus, imploring him, kneeling down to him and saying, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Leprosy was a horrible disease that was rampant in those days. It was a disease that they were so paranoid of it being contagious that they isolated you, and you had to leave your home. You couldn't touch your relatives. You had to live in a whole separate place with just other lepers. In fact, you were required, when anyone got very close, to yell out, unclean, unclean, so that no one would accidentally get close to you. It was a skin disease that caused, it was a neurological problem that caused you to lose your sense of feeling. And so as a result, you lean on a hot stove, you'd burn your hand, you wouldn't realize it. They used to think that leprosy ate the skin away, but they found out that what it was is, while lepers were sleeping, rats and all would just come and eat part of them away. So you'd wake up and you'd have one less finger, and you thought the leprosy did it, but really it was just because you don't wake up when you feel something biting you. But it was a horrible way to live. And so someone who was a leper hadn't seen or talked to their family, maybe in years. They didn't have any, no one was going to embrace them or be close to them at all. So here this leper comes, and you're forbidden to touch a leper. If you touched a leper, you were considered unclean yourself. Put Jesus in a spot. This guy comes and throws himself at his feet and says, "Can you make me clean?" Then Jesus, in verse 41, moved with compassion, stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I am willing, be cleansed." As soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. And Jesus told him, "I don't tell anybody about this." Stunning to come and touch someone that no one would touch. And yet the touch of Jesus was something that brought about this radical change where the guy's healed. Nobody was healed of leprosy in those days. But it ends up a bunch of people were when Jesus touched them. Turn over to chapter 3. Jesus is becoming popular because a lot of people are being healed. And as you'd expect, when sick people are being healed, everyone rushes. And so beginning with verse 7 of chapter 3, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great multitude from Galilee followed him, and from Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea beyond the Jordan, and those from Tyre and Sidon, so all the whole area around them. A great multitude, when they heard how many things he was doing, they came to him. So he told the disciples to get a little boat ready because these people were about to crush him. And in verse 10, "For he healed many, so that as many as had afflictions pressed about him to touch him." And then it talks about evil spirits and others being cast out as a result of it. A crowd of people, and they all wanted one thing, just to touch Jesus. And they were touching him. And we find out in several places that as they touched him, they were healed. You know, in this day and age, it's hard to get close to someone who's important. You have a perimeter set up. You have people there to make sure no one touches the celebrity. But Jesus was being crushed because he was letting people get close to him. And that's just the way he was. Look over at chapter 5. And we see two stories that intersect here of two different people that Jesus made a difference for. In beginning with verse 21, Mark chapter 5, "When Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, saying, 'My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her that she may be healed, and she will live.'" Now, this guy is a leader among the Jews. And for him to go and bow down to this young upstart rabbi, this guy who's just getting started, and in some ways is saying some things that are making Jews pretty nervous, for him to come and humble himself and throw himself at Jesus' feet was unheard of. But there was something that caused him to do that. His little 12-year-old girl was sick. And there was nothing that he wouldn't do for his 12-year-old girl. He was concerned for her. She was getting sicker, wasn't getting well. All of the advice of all the Jewish doctors, all of the plans that everyone had, the home remedies and everything else, weren't working. And now as a last resort, he comes to Jesus and he goes, "If you will just come and put your hands on my daughter, I know she'll be well. I've seen what you do. Please, please come and do this." And Jesus went with him, you know, apparently said okay, but a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Again, he's being pressed. And in that crowd, there was a certain woman that had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from many physicians. You know, sometimes you feel like the worst thing about being sick is what the doctors do to you. In those days, it was way worse. They would try all kinds of crazy things. And so she was getting to where the cures were worse than the disease. And she had spent all that she had. She ran out of insurance and she was no better, but rather she grew worse. In those days, a woman who was bleeding was considered unclean. You weren't supposed to touch her. You weren't supposed to go near to her. Now, in the normal flow of life, shall we say, there are certain times of the month that you might be wise to keep your distance. But they had that and they knew that. But imagine for 12 years of your life, you're considered unclean. No one can come close. You feel cursed, and you keep going from doctor to doctor, and you're spending everything that you have to try to make this well, and you're just getting worse, and it's miserable. You can't even remember feeling well 12 years ago. And because of this, she heard about Jesus, and verse 27, she came behind him in the crowd, and she touched his garment. Because she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. Immediately, the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. She just goes, wow. But Jesus felt something too. He felt that healing power flow out of his body through his clothes and into her. And so it says he knew in verse 30 that power had gone out of him, and he turned around in the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? His disciples thought he was nuts. Are you kidding me? People are crowding you everywhere, and you're going, who touched me? But he looked around to see her who had done this thing. He saw her and singled her out. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. A cursed woman, a woman who was unclean, and just by reaching out and touching his clothes, she felt that healing power. God touched her and healed her through that. Now, don't forget, there's another guy, Jairus, who's really anxious at this point, because he's like going, my daughter's sick. Why do these people keep coming? Why these crowds? I mean, I'm used to when I ask for something, people do it. I'm a leader, and it's not happening. And hey, it's great, here this lady is healed, but man, she's older. My daughter's 12 years old. My daughter was born when this lady got sick. And verse 35, while he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? How insensitive can you get? He is desiring for his daughter to be saved. And these people are like, too late. She's dead. Quit bugging the teacher. You lose. I mean, they could have been more sensitive about it at least, but this is what they did. But as soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, it got his attention, and he said to the ruler of the synagogue, to Jairus, do not be afraid, only believe. And he permitted no one to follow him. And I don't know, you know, again, talking about cursed things, you couldn't touch a dead body. Nothing was more unclean than a dead person. So I doubt if a whole lot of people wanted to go, let's go see the little girl's body. That's too gross. But he told Peter, James, and John to come with him because he wanted them to see something. And as they came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue in verse 38, and they saw a tumult and those who wept and wailed loudly. As soon as someone died, these professional mourners would come because, you know, oh man, if somebody's dead, it's a horrible thing and you want to hear the crying and everything. But people, you know, often when it's your loved one that dies, you're not like crying over the top. You're sometimes numb. You're just like, oh. And so people would come in and they would just like cry for you and, oh, you know, wail. And then you would tip them. And so these guys, these vultures are like, hey, somebody died. Come on, woo, let's go cry. So it's so noisy when they got there from all those people. When Jesus came in, he said to these professional mourners, "Why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." What? I mean, dead we know. She's dead. That's why we're crying. What, are you trying to ruin our gig? And he's like, "No, no, she's just asleep." So they ridiculed him. They go from like, oh, you know, mourning and weeping to where making fun of him, going, "Really? Sleeping? Wake her up." So he threw him out, and he took the father and the mother of the child, and then Peter and James and John came with him, and they entered the room where the child was lying. And then he took the child by the hand, and he said to her, "Talitha kumi," which is translated, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know about it. "Keep it quiet, but get her something to eat. She's hungry." This story interwoven, a woman who had been unclean for 12 years, a little girl who had only been alive for 12 years, and in both cases desperately needing something that no one else could offer. And here comes Jesus, an unclean woman, no problem. "Touch me and be healed." A dead body, a little girl, no problem. "Take her by the hand and lift her up and tell her, you know, get up, get something to eat. You're fine." Amazing. And this went on throughout Jesus' life. Over in chapter 6, we see that a bunch of people came to him. And the disciples had actually gone off to try to get a break, but all the people came. And there in chapter 6, after he had fed all these people and walked on the sea, as we come to the end of the chapter, it said they came over to Gennesaret, over on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. And they got out of the boat. A bunch of people recognized him. And verse 55, they ran through that whole surrounding region and began to carry about on beds those who were sick to wherever they heard he was. Wherever he entered into villages, cities, or the country, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and they begged him that they might just touch the hem of his garment. And as many as touched him were made well. How would you like to be the person that everybody said, "Touch him and you'll be well"? But Jesus doesn't seem to mind. The disciples were always worrying about this. Give him his space. But for people who were hurting, for people whose lives were being disrupted by the results of sickness, he was allowing the crowd to touch him. Over in chapter 7, we see his encounter with a man who was deaf and mute. Verse 32 of chapter 7, "Then they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to put his hand on them." See, they knew, oh, if you touch people, things happen. "And he took him aside from the multitude and put his fingers in his ears. And then he spit and licked his tongue and touched the guy's tongue with his saliva. And then, looking up to heaven, he sighed. And he said to him, 'Ephphatha,' that is, 'be opened.' Immediately his ears were opened, and the impediment of his speech was loosed, and he spoke plainly. And then he commanded them that they should tell no one, but the more he commanded them, the more widely they proclaimed it." People were amazed and going, "You can't believe what this guy does. Deaf people are able to hear, mutes are able to speak." Couldn't Jesus have just said, "You can hear and you can speak," and had it happen? Yeah, I'm sure he could have. But he sticks his fingers in the guy's ears. And then, even more imposingly, he spits and puts it on the guy's tongue. And the man is healed. He's able to hear and he's able to speak. Jesus Christ ministered to people up close and personal. I mean, how many of us would go touch somebody, some stranger's tongue, even if we knew it would help them? I'm afraid they'd bite you or something. But Jesus, that's the way he was. He came to get close and personal. He came to touch. We see this again over in chapter 8, beginning with verse 22. It says he came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man to him and begged him to touch him. You have the magic touch, Jesus. This guy can't see. Please touch him. And so he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And he spit on his eyes and he put his hands on him. And he asked him if he could see anything. And the guy goes, "That's kind of blurry. People look like trees." And then he put his hands on his eyes again, verse 25, and made him look up. And he was restored and he saw everyone clearly. And he told that guy, "Yeah, don't tell people about it." Another example, touching someone and making all the difference. Now turn over to chapter 10, and you see touching of a little different sort. Up until now, everyone that he touched that we saw was sick or cursed or forbidden. You've got a leper, you have somebody who's bleeding, you have somebody who's dead, you have people who can't see. There's something wrong with them. But check this out in verse 13 of chapter 10. Then they brought little children to him that he might touch them. Why? Not because they were sick. People just knew, "God, I want Jesus to touch my kid," that he might touch them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. They're like, hey, back off. He only has time for sick people. No kids allowed. Send the kids over somewhere else, and we're going to focus on adults here. And Jesus was greatly displeased when he saw what they were doing. And he said to them, "Let the little children come to me, and don't forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. Assuredly, I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will by no means enter it." And he took them up in his arms, and he laid his hands on them, and he blessed them. Jesus understood the blessing of touch. And he did it for these kids. And he goes, "You know what? Some of you are going to miss out on what God has for you because you won't come like this. Because you're so hard, you don't want anybody touching you. You're so focused on whatever it is that you understand that just cuddling, just being close to someone, you don't even get the value of that." But he says, when you begin to understand what these kids are doing, that they love for me to touch them, then you will start to understand what heaven is about, what my kingdom is about. And, you know, like I said earlier, we know what happens to children who are touched and children who aren't. But Jesus is saying, you all need that touch. It's not just for children, but for kids, absolutely. There's nothing more precious than to have little kids touching you and wanting to touch you and wanting you to touch them. I know this weekend some of us are going down to Mexico. And one of the coolest things in that orphanage is there's a bunch of little kids, tons of them, and they don't get to just have someone hold them. And so those of you who are going to Mexico, if you want, you can sit all day with three kids on your lap who just love to be close to you. It's awesome. We talked about VBS coming up in July. And, you know, you think, "I don't know if I have a week to go help with VBS. You know, I'm not very good with kids." Really, I mean, most of the time, all they need is for someone to be there with them. In our society, we're so paranoid about touch that it's like, I'm afraid to touch a kid because somebody's going to accuse me of something. Well, you do have to be sensitive because there is touching that is offensive. And if you're the type of person that when you touch people, they're like, "Ugh," maybe there's some adjustments to your lifestyle you might want to make, or you need to establish a relationship before that can happen. There's something wrong with people not wanting touch. But, you know, some of us, maybe we've been touched offensively, and we've been hurt, and as a result, we're just like, "I want to keep my distance. I want to be safe." But there's nothing like being around little kids. And again, if you have a week available to help with VBS and you don't do it, you're not understanding one of the greatest opportunities of life to just love children. At our together thing this last Wednesday, one of the most awesome things was having the kids in there with parents and grandparents worshiping God. And I know I looked across at, and I saw the Holderman family that were sitting right over here at a table. And as just standing up and worshiping God with grandkids hanging onto their legs, and it's just, what in the world could be more precious than that? What could be closer to what Jesus wants to do for us than that? And you know, by the way, John, who called himself the disciple that Jesus loved, John, who was so close to Jesus that at the Last Supper, he was like laying up against him. He got as close as he could, and he loved that touch. Even when Jesus was speaking privately to Peter on the sea of, by the Sea of Galilee, John was hanging around because he just liked to be close. Well, how John describes what he was presenting, and I'll read it to you from the book of 1 John. He's talking about Jesus, and he was the one who in the Gospel of John said, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. But listen to this from 1 John chapter 1 and verse 1. That which was from the beginning, the one who was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled concerning the word of life. This life was manifested, and we saw it and bear witness, and so on. And he said, we have fellowship with him, and our fellowship is with each other and with him. See, John never forgot what it was like to touch Jesus. It's why in the upper room, when, you know, Thomas said like, oh, I don't believe Jesus came, because he missed it when Jesus showed up the first time. Thomas goes, until I put my finger in the hole in his hand from the nails, until I put my fist in that spear wound in his side, I'm not going to believe. If I was Jesus, when I showed up after that, I would go, you're dreaming. You think I want you touching me? Hey, this is my new body. Don't mess it up. Don't grimy it. But what did Jesus do? He says to Thomas, I get it. Go ahead. Touch me. Put your finger in. It's okay. I'm real. Because Jesus came because God wanted to be real to us. He wanted us to know that God isn't just some mysterious force. God became a man so that we could have a God who could touch us, a God who we could touch in turn. Because it's through that, and the way he touched people, you think about him washing the feet of his disciples and then telling us, yeah, I want you doing that kind of stuff too. Radical. And Mark, even though he's telling the quick version of the story of Jesus, he zooms in, zeroes in on the fact that look who Jesus associated with and look who he touches. To Jesus, it didn't matter if he was touching a leper who was cursed, a woman who was bleeding, a dead body, or a little kid. He came to reach out and to touch. And he came to allow himself to be touched. And that is one of the most stunning parts of the story of Jesus, that he did that. Now, for us, that might make us feel uncomfortable. Most of us have our space issues. Most of us don't want someone to get too close. When you're sitting on an airplane and it's like open seating and there's an open seat next to you, do you hope that someone sits there? And you see the largest person coming down the aisle, and you're like, no, please, no. And you might start coughing, and you throw your stuff on the seat, thinking they'll think somebody's, because it's like, I don't want to get too close. But see, Jesus is the one who calls us. The reason he leaves us here is so that we can be close. The reason he came is to touch. Touching matters. Touching is important. Whether a literal physical touch or whether just emotionally being touched by someone's story, being willing to listen to them, caring. You know, can you look at things that are happening where there are needs there, and does that touch you or does it not? Man, early on in my Christian walk, I was surprised by the way Pastor Chuck Smith at Calvary was about touching people. He would let anybody touch him. And I was real protective. I would stand back near the door and make sure somebody didn't get weird with them. And sometimes there'd be somebody who was crazy trying to attack them or whatever. And, you know, you get your action for the week. And I remember one time there's this lady who was crazy, but, you know, she was one of our crazies. She was there every week, and it was like no big deal. And she came up to Chuck, and I'm watching carefully, but she had a vial of perfume. And she was inspired by the woman who anointed Jesus with oil. But she decided to pour it on his head. And she had it out before I could get there, and she pours it on his head, and it's in his eyes. His eyes are burning, and then he, like, out of the corner of one eye, he's looking at me like, Dave, where, you know. And I felt bad, you know. Missed my opportunity to hit a woman. But, not really, but yeah, I did. I felt horrible. But Chuck was like, I'll never forget one night. It was after church, and this was in the early days of when the AIDS disease was first known by people. And there was no treatment for it. It was simply a death sentence, and it was a horrible disease. And we had heard of, everybody thought if you got near somebody, if you ate at a salad bar with somebody with AIDS, you'll get AIDS and everything. But a guy came, and we walked out in the parking lot, and no one else was there. And Chuck and I walked out, and this guy comes up, and he's like, he probably weighed 70 pounds, really skinny, open sores all over his body. And he said, Pastors, will you pray for me? He goes, I have AIDS, and they don't think I have much longer to live. He was coughing and everything. And I was like, oh, boy. And Chuck just went, and he put his hands on the guy. And he looked at me, and I'm like, okay, fine, I'll go with you. And we put our hands on that guy, and I'll never forget as we prayed for him, and then he hugged both of us, and his countenance changed. And I could tell nobody had touched that guy for a while. Nobody had hugged him. Nobody had gotten that close to pray for him. It was just, Chuck, it was just, that's the way he always was. Then we went in the office, and we got Windex out, and we're like, oh man, what's going to happen to us? But he wasn't going to let, you know, fear of a disease keep him from touching someone. And Chuck was that way. If you've ever shaken hands with Chuck, you don't know what his hands have touched. Because if you're in a room and there's a big bug there, he doesn't look for a Kleenex. He just reaches down, picks up, squashes it, and then he shook your hand after. It's just, but that's the way it was with Jesus. It's like, you know, I'm not afraid of what I touch. I'm not afraid that somehow God can't protect me from doing what he has told me to do. And that was such a great example to me. But what about us? Many of us don't like to be touched. We just want people to keep their distance. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because the last time you trusted someone, they really burned you. And so you're like, you know, I am not going to be vulnerable again. I'm just going to be smart and keep my distance. Why be alive if you can't do that which makes such a difference? That is being able to touch, being able to be close to someone, being able to get inside their head, being able to have them share what's going on in their lives. Jesus left us here to represent him so that we can touch people the way he touched people. And I believe that many times, sometimes literally, I believe that if we would just have the faith to put our hands on someone and pray for them, maybe we would see more people healed. But I know for a fact that there are some people who just to know that someone cares and listens to them, and just that brief touch, innocent of course, but just to say, I'm connecting with you, I'm relating to you. I mean, isn't that what Jesus did? It's the way he spent his life. Read through the Gospel of Mark and you see that. It's stunning the kinds of people he spent time with. And I'm suggesting that we are called to do no less. Maybe you have been made uncomfortable in the past, and because of it, the lesson that you took away was leave people alone and keep your distance. I want to encourage you. Let people get close. Let people touch you. Come and play with some kids. If you don't have any kids or grandkids, borrow some. Everyone who has them loans them. And something happens. Something hormonally happens in your body when you touch someone. Make sure with your kids and your grandkids that they have this constant touch. Make sure that with your spouse, with your friends, that they can pretty much count on you, whether they like it or not. You're gonna grab them. You're gonna touch them. You want to be close to them, because we need that. And the people who think they don't need it the most. And if we are to represent Jesus, we better understand this is who Jesus is today. And we are his hands. He wants to touch people literally, and he wants to do it through us, and it's a great privilege to be able to do that. Maybe there are some of you here today that go, I got over touch a long time ago. In fact, I can't even imagine that anyone would want to touch me. It seems like everything about me is just repulsive to people. And whenever I let someone get close to me, it just hurts me. And I'm done with that. And maybe the idea of Jesus touching you is something that you just think, Jesus has been gone for a long time. If Jesus was here, I'd let him touch me, but I'm not going to let people touch me. Well, if you've never given your life to Jesus, he wants to touch you today. And if you allow him to touch you, your life will never be the same. You will be changed forever by his touch. And all you have to do is come to him and say, I want you to be my Jesus. I want you to be my Lord. I want to get close to you. I want to learn what it is to be touched by you, and then to carry that on and be a distributor of your touches. And if that's you and you've never given your life to Jesus, do it today, please. Because even right now, there might be people in this room who you're feeling like all of a sudden, whoa, I'm feeling like something's happening in my heart right now. And that just may be his touch. Him coming to you, you may feel it physically in your body, just, wow, something's happening. And that's him and his way of inviting you to start your life over today. And if that's you, there'll be people down here in the front. They just love to pray with people. And so come down after the service and just say, I want to be touched by Jesus. And they will pray with you, and Jesus will come and live inside you forever. He'll change everything about your life. You can come down for prayer for any reason. If you just go, nobody's touched me for a long time, there are people down here who will touch you. They'll be glad to just let you know tangibly that God cares about you. They'll pray with you for whatever it is that you're facing this week that you might be worried about. And God will touch you through allowing people to touch you. I know for me, when people pray for me and they put their hands on me, it's just special. You can feel Jesus touching you as you allow his people to do the same. And so I pray that if you have those needs, come down and receive from him. Let's pray. Lord, how blessed we are to have been touched by you. We know that in those days, everybody wanted to get in line and have you touch them. And you've touched us because we're your children. And usually you touched us by somebody else touching us and you working through them. Lord, most of us can remember the first time our resistance was broken down, when someone against all odds broke through our defenses and expressed your love. And we thank you. Help us to do the same. Like that old song says, he touched me, and now I am no longer the same. Those of us who have been touched by you will never be the same. God, the people here who you are touching right now and drawing to yourself, help them to decide that today is the day to come down and let the Lord of the universe put his hands on them and receive them into his family. Thank you, God, for all that you've done for us, for loving us enough to become one of us. And those hands of yours that worked in carpentry and stonework for so long, ever since you were a little kid, and ultimately had nails put through them because of your love for us. Thank you that those arms are still stretched out to us and you are welcoming us. And we look so forward to the day when we go to heaven and we can be literally touched by you. We can't wait. Help us in the meantime to touch others on behalf of you. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's all stand. Again, if you need prayer, come on down and get some prayer. Give your life to Jesus if you haven't done that. But for all of us, I'm praying that this week we will be sensitive to opportunities to get a little outside of ourselves and to reach out and make a difference for somebody this week, just to touch somebody that we wouldn't have normally touched. Jesus is calling us to do that. And if you're hard and you don't let people touch you, mellow out, chill out a little bit and let them do it. It's not going to kill you. And you'll be him as you even allow people to get close to you. God bless.